Accessing
toilet.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
There you go. Love it.
Wow. Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
And you guys were wondering when I came in today, I'm like, we got a new drop. And you're like, when are we going to use it? Does it matter?
Oh, no. Don't.
Toilet!
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero, Georgia linebacker Nolan Smith, sports radio legend Chris Mad Dog Russo. Still to come from HBO's Perry Mason, actor Matthew Reese. And now it's Rich Eisen.
All right, hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH, number to dial on the program. We already had a great chat with Tom Pelissero, my colleague from the NFL Network, on everything going on in the NFL world. Nolan Smith, who ran a 4.39 at the Combine, from Georgia football. Christopher Mad Dog Russo. If you missed any of the first 2 hours of this program, our relationship with the Roku channel is so strong that they re-air us over and over and over again until we come on the air live tomorrow on Channel 210. For those watching, it's free on the Roku channel. We're also on all Amazon Fire TV, select Samsung Smart TV. If you've got the Roku app, you can watch us anywhere for free because the Roku channel is part of it. And then on the internet, Tubes, therokuchannel.com, we're free. Sirius, XM, Odyssey, our podcast, our YouTube page. There's so many ways to consume this program. And then there's also the Rich Eisen Show collection page. So we have a video on demand service that we're very excited about. Every single day, you can watch videos there as your heart's content. And then, you know, our YouTube page, you never know when a video is going to pop. We had the great actress Rhea Seehorn here a couple weeks ago talking about her new movie, Linoleum. And, of course, we went down a Better Call Saul wormhole with her. That video of her appearing 2 weeks ago just popped all of a sudden yesterday. I have no idea why the YouTube page just goes crazy, but it gets caught in an algorithm, which, by the way, would be, I think, the name of our cover band, right? Caught in an algorithm. Doesn't that sound like one of those cover bands that your friend's like, hey, tomorrow night I'm going to be performing with my my band Caught in an Algorithm. You should like come that. See it.
Algorithm in the Straight Shots.
Another one like that is On the Brink of Optimism, right? That's what Diana Rossini said the Jets are with Aaron Rodgers, right?
On the Brink.
Optimistic, know that they're on the brink of I don't know. Optimism on the brink. There it is. That's it. Optimism on the brink. That's what they are. Great. Still waiting on Aaron Rodgers. Still waiting on that. The actor Matthew Reese, who plays Perry Mason in the HBO hit show. You know, how many limited series do you wish would just come back? Oof. I would sign for 1883 coming back. I'd sign for 1884. You know what I mean? So, and I know they got 1923,
yep.
But so many limited series you see, and you're like, really? That's it? Well, Perry Mason is back, and it's great to see. And I love The Americans, and Matthew Reese, as we all know, was in that, and he's going to come out here. Some people think you look like him, Chris.
I've gotten for a long time now that I look like him.
You know, when he comes out, you'll see him with hair and that mustache that he's got going on. Ooh. So it'll be tough for people to see, but I see it. Okay. I do understand it.
Yeah, I get it.
Did we ask that of Kelly O'Coin when he was here a couple months ago? Did he confirm that when he was here?
They took a picture together.
Yeah.
You and him. Oh, that's what it was. I thought we mentioned it to him as well because, you know, he was in Americans as well.
He said he saw it also. Yeah, okay. He said he saw it. But I get a lot like him. Also, I get a lot of Dollar Bill.
So, anyway, Matthew Reese is about to come out.
Any handsome bald man.
Do you ever get Rich Eisen?
No, stop. Stop it. Two pieces of NBA news. One of them affects the Western. They both affect the Western Conference. Steven Adams is going to have to take a shot to the knee. They're waiting on him to come back from his knee injury. That's why I've been stashing him on my Rich Eisen Show Fantasy League bench for a month. He ain't coming back for the regular season. He needs a stem cell injection.
Jeez.
The old SCI doesn't sound very good. He's out for the rest of the regular season. And you know who might be out for the rest of the regular season is Kevin Durant, who in warming up last night.
What the hell is this?
Just goes to lay it up and in, and his left ankle gives way, and he falls down to the ground.
Like he slipped on a part of the floor that was wet or had moisture.
Did he
slip
or is just his ankle turned on him?
I thought he slipped, and as he slipped, his ankle kind of rolled. That's what it looked like in the video. But
you imagine you're that guy with the with the floor cleaner, the floor dryer, whatever that, and you watch Kevin Durant go down, and everybody suddenly just turns to you. Oh my goodness.
He's out for,
and so if you're the Denver Nuggets, you're like, okay, so two of the teams that's closest to us.
Yep.
And Ja Morant, when's he coming back?
Out another four games.
And out another four games. So that's of his own doing, as we all know.
Also, wasn't that Durant's first home game?
Yeah, it was going to be his home debut.
Oh, my gosh. So everybody's like coming there to see it.
Yeah. So, like I said before, like the Phoenix Suns fans got this gift of Durant sitting under the Christmas tree, had to wait a couple weeks for Christmas to open it.
And then Hanukkah happens?
You get to play with it, and it toy breaks.
There you go.
Man.
Hey, brother, I told you, look out for the Nuggets, and then they lose to the Bulls. So, I have no idea.
Well, Adam really cursed the Bulls last night on our podcast, Rich. He talked
the
really
Rich
bad
Eisen
about
Show basketball
the
podcast?
Rich Eisen Show basketball podcast. He talked really bad about the Bulls, and apparently they heard it. Mm-hmm. And they
sure that's what happened. I'm sure they took it out on...
Well, they won after he talked bad about them. Brockman, I mean, that's just the only logical conclusion.
I don't know what happened there. So you look at the Western Conference standings. Sacramento is now in the two spot. They have the same record as Memphis. Phoenix is fourth, Golden State, and the Clippers, who won last night. Hey, Fred VanVleet's pissed at the refs.
Can't blame him.
They lose in Denver. Mm-hmm. They had that game kind of wrapped. I mean, there's a few minutes to go, and then the roof caved in. And part of that was when it was a one-possession game. Scotty Barnes gets the gate. Your favorite ref, Chris.
Scott Foster.
He tees him up and throws him out of the game.
to the point
where... One of his colleagues, I don't know which official this was kind of looking around like, what happened?
And he was closer to Barnes. That's the weird
thing. When somebody, like the international symbol of what I miss is this.
Yeah.
Like you're looking around, right? What I miss?
He had the total dumbfounded look.
And so I'm getting dizzy with the what I miss thing. His Scott Foster's colleague, Foster said that Barnes used verbiage that which directly questioned the integrity of the crew. Who knew that Scott Foster speaks an iambic pentameter when trying to defend his bizarre technical foul calls?
The verbiage used.
Were you writing down Foster's iambic pentameter for our fantasy league, Chris? Making that note?
I did also write down Rembrandt's in his bathroom.
Okay.
Last hour.
So the Raptors are a salty bunch, and in Los Angeles last night, taking on the Clippers in a 7-point game, Fred VanVleet gets teed up by the referee Ben Taylor, who he then proceeds to call out by name profanely after the contest.
Definitely in the third quarter there. I mean, I don't mind. I'll take a fine. I don't really care. I thought, you know, Ben Taylor was terrible tonight. I thought that most nights, you know, a couple of the, you know, out of the three, there's one or two that just the game up, you know, and it's been like that a couple games in a row. Denver was tough, obviously. You come out tonight, you're competing pretty hard. The third quarter, I get a bull tech, changes the whole dynamic of the game, changes the whole flow of the game. And, you know, most of the refs are trying hard. I like a lot of the refs are trying hard. They're pretty fair. They communicate well. And then you got the other ones who just want to be and just kind of the game up. Nobody's coming to see that. They come to see the players. And I think we're losing a little bit of the fabric of what the NBA is and was. And it's been disappointing this season. You can look up most of my texts this year have been with Ben Taylor officiating. So at a certain point as a player, you feel it's personal. And it's never a good place to be. That's not why we lost tonight. We got outplayed. But it definitely makes it tougher to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be personal with Ben Taylor now. If it already hasn't.
Forever.
So there's that. Boy, he got his money's worth. I just want Fred, just keep your head on straight. I need you in my fantasy league in about 3 weeks from now when actually the games start to matter for me again. I mean, I didn't see. I'm glad he said that that's not what it cost them the game last night, because what cost them the game last night is they couldn't stop Terrence Mann when he came in for Russell Westbrook. This just in, they might be better with Terrence Mann at point. Just file that one away, TJ.
Well, I've said that before.
I know you did, and everyone wondering why are they getting Russ, because things are going well with Terrence Mann.
No, we can use Russ. They just need to configure their lineups.
Hey, he got his money's worth. I guess, is this a good time to say that it's Get Over It Day, National Get Over It Day? What the hell is that?
You know, on these calendars, there's also every day is like a day of something. And I noticed that today was National Get Over It Day.
Okay. So do you have a top five list that we can get to before Matthew Reese joins
us here? I absolutely do. There's just, you know, five things that...
First of all, I can't get over the fact that there's a National Get Over It Day. And somebody's created a website for it.
Right.
And now people are Instagramming it out. Things that... So you have your top five list of things that you need to get over, you should get over, you've gotten over. How are you constructing this?
Well, it's, you know, it's not a grab bag or anything, DJ Mikey D, so we don't need that music. Okay. But it's just, there's a lot of stuff I think that we all have that we hang on to, okay. and it just kind of hangs on us like a weighted blanket. And I just picked five things that do that to me, and I just realized that on National Get Over It Day, I just got to do my best to get over it.
Okay, so go for it. What do you got?
All right, well, coming in at number five, you know, you guys aren't wrestling fans, and I am, and I know we got wrestling fans out there. I got to get over the fact that Asuka tapped out to Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania 34. You know, it was like 6 years ago, and I still can't.
About to say, WrestleMania 34, that sounds like a long ago.
Yeah, it was
a
long time ago. We're up to 39 now, so, you know, it was 5 years ago. I just can't get over the fact that they would build up a monster, just an undefeated star, just to have her tap out.
These are good, by the way.
I know I got to get over it. It's going to be hard. Eventually, I will. Come at number four, 2006 National League Championship Series. The Mets against the Cardinals. For years and years and years, I've been upset at Carlos Beltran. Yeah, I've been upset about him not swinging that bat. But I went back and rewatched it. Adam Wainwright threw one of the nastiest curveballs that God ever made. And Beltran was on such fire that playoffs. I think I got to just get over the fact he didn't swing the bat because that pitch was so dirty. I got to get over it. Number three, I think we all can relate to this. I don't care, fellas, if I'm on an airplane, a train, a Greyhound bus, I'm in the back of a Subaru. I just have to get over the fact that the person in front of me is going to recline their seat back as far as they can, even if no other person on that form of transportation moves their chair. I just have to get over the fact that it's going to happen to me, because it happens to me all the time, no matter what. I'm still going to be mad, but I figure if I tell myself to get over it, Rich, I'll be less mad when it happens. And number two, the Sixers choking on draft day. I could do an hour on this. Well, we put up the picture Allen Iverson. We actually got that right. But the Sixers have made some horrible, horrible, horrible draft day moves in not drafting Brad Doherty, trading Moses Malone. And then we also have guys,
Tatum,
Ben Simmons at 16. Tatum. That was bad. Tatum. Markelle Fultz when Jason Tatum was there.
That is a name. I've heard that name.
That's a 20-year mistake. You'll never get over that. Mikal Bridges. He was a guy who was right there. He was in Philly. He's never missed a game, Chris Brockman. We traded him for a guy who's played 13 total games.
At least he's not on the division now, just crushing it.
Yeah. So, yeah, and he's going to hurt us every time. I got to get over that. And number one, look, Dez catching it. Dez caught the ball. There's nothing anyone can tell me or show me to say he didn't. But at some point, I got to get over it. I'm not going to, but I'm going to do my best. And those are just five things I need to try to get over.
Let me handle one, if you don't mind, and I'll push back. I do agree Dez caught it, although the rule was properly interpreted. And I cannot push back on the Sixers draft day woes, and cannot push back about WrestleMania. As you know, that's your forte. And I understand what you also had to say sports-wise there. But there's a button on the chairs in transportation conveyances for a reason. The button is there to push and move your seat back. And I will never understand people who get upset over having somebody recline their chair into their row. I don't get it, because your button works too. So let's keep going back.
Until the like person in the back row where me and Brockman had to sit once can't recline?
Excuse me.
I'm just trying to look out for my fellow passenger, Rich.
I'm sorry. At some point, somebody's left holding the bag, and hopefully those flights too, you can still move back as
you,
well.
That you
the
cannot. Seat, well, you cannot.
I can't do anything about that all the way up and row whatever I'm in.
Well, yeah, you're in 1A. So
excuse
this
me,
this
I'm
is,
not.
You don't need the. You don't
I'm
have
not,
these problems. You
I'm
fly
not,
PJs.
I'm mean, not in 1A because I'm not a bulkhead guy.
Okay,
and I understand.
I understand.
I'm talking yeah, about this from a certain there. Altitude, and yeah. I'm not talking about the height.
Feet?
I get it. I understand. Yeah. But there's a button.
I'm just saying.
On the chair for a reason.
But it stinks. The person in front of me is 5'2 and 105
so
pounds, and they're going to recline. I'm 6'3, 260. And you got a 5'2, 200 pound person just going to test the limits of the recline? Nah, man. That's messed up to me.
The problem is someone 6'3. 260 reclining into my space,
and I don't do that because I try to be a good human being.
You don't recline?
I trip. I don't get up on plate.
Excuse me.
I don't get up and I don't recline. No.
You never recline in a plane.
Well, you can't say never, but like I very rarely recline.
Never say never.
I never recline.
Get out of here.
And I'm not a get up.
Get out of here.
I'm telling you, man.
Get out of here.
I'm the only honest one here.
I recline every time.
I always recline.
I always get the big seat anyway because I need bit room.
So then hit the
button. Mikey's in first class too.
No, I go up front. I need room. I can't sit in those.
I'm being dead honest with you. I don't.
I can't.
I might recline very so slightly.
Oh, big guy. Okay.
But I make sure that I'm not like.
If I saw TJ sitting behind me, I would not recline. That's out of courtesy.
You're lying.
What a liar.
And you know what? You're lying.
You know what, Mike? You know what I can't get over? And then we'll bring out Matthew Reese. What I can't get over is somebody behind me using the back of my chair to get up from theirs.
See, that sucks. That's bad. Can't do that either.
The armrests where there are buttons to use to recline.
Well, they probably would if you were reclined so far back into the lap.
Use your traps. Use your traps and your tries and get up that way.
Yeah, you don't grab. That's
well, Mike. They do that because he's in their lap.
I'm sitting there. I'm not in your space, really.
Yes. I might
not even have reclined yet.
You recline.
You're
doing
using
that.
My space.
Also, shut your window shade.
Oh my God. Look at us. Just now
we're not gonna be able to fly.
I know Matthew Reese is gonna agree with me. He don't want nobody reclining into him. How could you?
National Get Over It Day.
I'm never going to get over
not
any of those things.
Not really
by the
working
way.
Right now. It's tough for me to get over a lot
you
of this
what
stuff.
I'm never going
to
get over Jimmy, all the non-holding calls.
This guy.
Oh, it's the Super Bowl over the Tuck Rule game. There were like 14 holdings.
By the way, that's 2002.
There's no time limit on these, Rich.
Or 2000. That's 2002. Oh, the Tuck Rule game.
No, sorry. I meant the helmet catch.
You meant the helmet. Yeah, I knew what you
I'm
meant.
I'm sorry.
I knew what
all
you meant.
Those
I meant the helmet catch.
Moments you were in the playoffs that I was sitting at home
Super Bowl,
watching.
Eventual Super Bowl.
You're triggered.
This guy should never complain about
Matthew
anything.
Matthew Reese is here, everybody. This is going to be delightful. Can't wait to chat with him next on The Rich Eisen Show. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. And we're back here on the Rich Eisen Show Terrestrial Radio Network, part of our Roku channel live stream, where we just showed a clip of Perry Mason on HBO. Season 2 premiered this past Monday, and the star Matthew Rhys is here on the program. And I just love the idea of taking Perry Mason and kind of turning it into an L.A. Confidential, a Chinatown type vibe to this show.
Yeah.
Is that how it was pitched to you originally?
Absolutely. You know, when they said we're going to take it back to, you know, as I said, when the books were, he had a rougher edge, I think, in the books.
Yes.
He tended to go around town beating people up. And
was not Raymond Burr, is what you're saying.
No, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. The reimagination was not going to be your father's, you know, Perry Mason.
Right.
Which he wasn't. And you know, the writers said, we want to load his bases, make him a little rough. They made him a World War I veteran.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they kind of, you know, they gave him this incredible backstory. So we saw the origin story of how he became the lawyer in season one, which just adds to the kind of richness and the layer of it.
But there was only supposed to be a season one, right?
There was, yeah. We were meant to do a one and done, but the public spoke. No, you know,
well,
I think
that's cool.
Yes, no, it really is. It's everything you ever dream of. Is that HBO went, you know, the reaction's been great, and how would you feel about a second? So I gladly put on the fedora again.
So when it was done,
Yeah, yeah, we did. No, that was it. As we rolled into COVID, I just thought that was the end of Mason for me.
Right.
And it did well.
So did you rewatch any of the old Perry Masons? You're just like, that is so far afield of what we're going to do. It doesn't even matter.
It is. And In the past, I've done parts that have been originated by other actors, and I have watched them, and to my detriment, because I know I have this weird thing where I know somewhere subconsciously or unconsciously I will mimic or regurgitate, or in some way, yeah, you know, it'll come out. So when that happens now, I just leave the source, the originators alone.
Yes.
And try and, you know, start from scratch and, you know, bring it up organically.
Matthew Rhys here on the Rich Eisen Show. And for our radio audience, I mean, folks who know you and watch Perry Mason, seeing on the Roku channel, they know it's you. On the radio, they might be, this sounds nothing like Perry Mason. So how do you do such an incredible American accent, Matthew?
I've said, and I continue to say, is basically, I think, especially kids who are of the 80s in the UK.
Yes.
We were all, you know, early 80s, we were all raised watching Starsky and Hutch and the A-Team and Airwolf and, you know, American show. We were raised on American shows.
So is Dallas still too early or no?
No, Dallas was
who
huge.
Who shot JR was
of,
huge,
of
right?
course, of
right.
course. Okay. Bobby Ewing in the shower, yeah. Like, come on, what's going on? Is that what happens in America? So it must be great. It's the promised land. Patrick Duffy emerges unscathed.
Okay.
Yes.
So it is not too early then.
No,
very good.
No.
Okay.
No. So, right. You know, we would be in our backyards pretending to be, you know, Starsky and Hutch, not you know, trying to act out Downton Abbey. That's what we did. We tried to impersonate Americans from an early age.
And so, I mean, yeah, that's so it comes naturally to you because that's what you did as a child, or is you just imagine the biggest a-hole you know of and think you can imitate that person, or
no,
what is it?
I just think it's bedded in from a very early age. Early foundations are in deep. You
yes.
know, you're continually. I was listening to that sound, and you know, when you're out playing cowboys and Indians, you're trying to sound as realistic as possible. And then obviously in drama school, you know, they hammer it in pretty hard, and then I did a production of, talking of shows that have had an originator, I did a production of The Graduate in the West End with Kathleen Turner as my Mrs. Robinson.
Oh, my goodness.
Where I knew I had to kind of nail an American accent, so I really put a lot of time in on that one.
So you Dustin Hoffman did up, is that what you're saying? Or you didn't watch it because you didn't want to imitate?
No, that's what I did. So I went straight, you know, I'd watched The Graduate, obviously.
Yes.
And then I went back and I watched it and I could feel myself taking lines and just, you know, mm-hmm. dusting them. So I don't do that again. But Hoffman actually, he came to a matinee
Of you performing in The Graduate.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My God.
I know. And that you know, one of the things I wanted to say to the theatre manager at the time is, why did you tell me he was in? Who would do that?
Right.
And also, it was my introduction to this thing that happens. It happens in Broadway, it happens in the West End in London, where if a very famous person is doing a play, other famous people will come to see them and come around stage backstage to see them, regardless of whether they know them or not.
Right.
So after the first few, like, I would say to Kathleen Turner, was very kind to me. She's always like, come and meet, you know, whomever was, you know, James Coburn.
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas came, James Coburn, Tom Hanks, you know. And some of the times I go, do you know James Coburn? She goes, no, but he just came to say hello. This is what happens. So anyway, so this had been happening. We'd all been invited, you know. You'd get the knock on the door and her dresser would be there saying, Miss Turner would like to invite you to a glass of champagne, which means there's a famous person in. And I would go, who is it? And she would say, so we hear Hoffman is in, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to meet Dustin Hoffman. He's going to come round, right? Never came backstage.
Get out of here.
No.
So how do you take that?
Devastated. Absolutely devastated. Never. It's never quite been the same for me since.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's where you want the champagne call.
Of course. You want Hoffman to go, well, you know, you just want that paternal nod. We're just looking for our father's approbation at all time, and for him to go, well done.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Didn't get it.
Plastics.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No.
Okay.
Zippo.
Matthew Rhys here on the Rich Eisen Show. And you were kind enough when I met you in our green room, when I mentioned to you how I saw Michael Sheen, a fellow Welshman.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Is that the proper term?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, okay. Very much so.
A fellow Welshman speaking to the Welsh men's national football team.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Am I saying this properly?
Kind of say that, yes. Okay, yes, appreciate it.
I'm trying to, do the right thing.
Yeah, noted.
And his speeches were intense.
Yes.
And you know Michael,
yes,
right?
I lived with Michael.
Where were your speeches, is what I asked you.
Well, I like to think that predominantly most of his speeches are based on my speeches, although my speeches were given from, you know, couches on Saturday nights.
Yes.
You know, post-game, post-drinking, post-yeah. So a lot, he's drawn a lot of inspiration from me, basically.
Understood.
Yes.
Without you, he's nothing.
He is literally nothing.
Understood.
Yes. So I've been privy to those speeches several times. So it was nothing new to me.
Okay, very good. I imagine you are a fan. Are you a fan of football or another sport?
For me growing up, rugby was the big game.
Rugby.
That was the game I played, and that was the game, you know, still watch. But yes, you know, Cardiff, the city I'm from, has a football team, and I was, you know, am a Cardiff supporter. But then, obviously, you know, we all got swept away for the World Cup because it was the first time in, you know, 50-60 years.
And who did you play in the first match? The Americans.
That was a big day because I had so many American friends going, where are we going to watch this game? And I thought it was kind of very equally matched as well. You know, it was going to be a good game.
Yes.
So I went to an American bar with some Welsh friends.
And, you did?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, in Brooklyn, yeah.
Normally, you know, I don't know, for a big match, I can't be around other people. You know what I mean?
If it was a rugby game, I wouldn't.
Really?
Yes, I can't.
Okay.
Yeah, it gets too intense for me. In fact, I've had to stop watching England versus Wales now because my partner thinks I'm going to have a heart attack.
Mm.
So I've actually stopped watching that game.
Is that just for health?
Yeah, literally. She goes, you're going to have an aneurysm or something bad will happen if you continue to watch those two games.
So you were able to go to a bar in Brooklyn.
Yes.
To take in this match, and everyone here in Los Angeles knows Gareth Bale because he won the MLS Cup for LAFC.
Yeah,
you know, very handsome man. Very handsome.
He is great ambassador for Wales, and you know that. To me, that was like the fairy tale ending for him, who's he's been living with some injury for some time now.
Yeah.
And to there was always great debate as to where he was going to go after being all those years in Spain, and I just thought it was ideal way for him to go out with with that medal
and then
that ring.
And then obviously the Americans moved on and Wales, that had to be a bitter pill,
one of the worst things for me was seeing us being drawn with England in the first round. That was just a killer blow because that was a cruel turn of fate.
Yes.
It was a great matchup, I thought, against the USA. I thought, that's great. And then Iran, I thought, that's a chance to win.
You got it.
That's the opportunity.
Yes.
And we didn't.
They did not.
And it was a big stage. I don't think that they quite played to the potential that they've shown in the past, which was a real shame. But just to watch them at a World Cup was incredible.
Sure. But you know there's only one person you can point the finger of blame to. It's Michael Sheen.
Well, we did.
He did not do his job.
No, no. You know, wasn't inspirational enough.
Correct.
But we've always said that about Michael. Yeah, it's the...
Matthew Rhys here on the Rich Eisen Show. Speaking of the Americans, did you see what I did right there?
I did. Seamless.
Fantastic show.
Yeah.
How did you prepare for your role for that program?
Well, fortunately enough, Joe Eisberg, the gentleman who created and wrote is a former CIA operative himself.
Yes.
So the scripts were always sent. First people ever to read the scripts were the CIA. Because if you're a former intelligence officer writing about intelligence, they would vet it, immediately. So we would get notes from, the CIA. So we had that wealth behind us, and he would give us counter-surveillance lessons, all sorts, which I thought I'd be relatively good at, because basically counter-surveillance is pretending something isn't there, which is, I just thought, well, actors do that with cameras all the time. I'm going to be a master of this. I was appalling at it. He gave me away several times. So there was, we had this font of, information in Joe. And then there was another gentleman who was... An illegal, as they were called,
yes,
who came over with the KGB, set up as an American, and then was actually turned by the FBI. So yeah, we had these incredible people around us telling us that because my greatest sentence at all the time was saying, this is just too unbelievable,
right?
And they would always say, this actually happened. That's what
you got a good example of that, where you're getting a script or you're acting in a scene.
One of the early ones on the first episode of the first season was when Philip, my character, takes on another guy's as a gentleman called Clark, and he tries to romantically woo a kind of a secretary in the FBI. And this was an enormous operation by the KGB. It was something like Operation Romeo, mm-hmm. where KGB illegals were trained in the art of kind of, wooing and charm. I think it was by an Englishman, to kind of woo these low-level, cleared secretaries, mm-hmm. with the hope of marrying them in order to gain... intelligence gathering, which was stunning to me. It was the audacity of the KGB, especially in the early 80s, is dizzying.
Well, yeah. And then that's what's so incredible about this show,
yeah.
is how what I think are great television shows are made where I'm rooting for you and I'm also kind of rooting against you.
Yeah.
And I'm totally conflicted. Breaking Bad was that way for me in many ways. Like, yeah. I'm rooting for Walter White, and then I'm rooting against Heisenberg, and
yeah.
they're the same person. And I was rooting for you, I was rooting against you, and it was amazing.
Yeah, and we're
just amazing the whole time.
I think we're in this great age of the anti-hero now, where the kind of the balance of doing that of the conflict, brings up in an audience. I think is always, it just enriches it and enhances it. But yes, it was the kind of perfect. It was the perfect anti-hero of going, let's make the KGB operatives the heroes.
What do you think about more of them? I mean, I know the way it ended. I don't want to I guess we're past the spoiler alert. But
yes, yeah.
Anything can be written for you and Kerry Russell and obviously the whole cast to get back together again.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
Yeah, funnily enough, the whole team of us, including the writing staff, we're all having a dinner very soon because we're celebrating 10 years.
Okay,
And we joke about doing a two-hour special where we close out or we go back to see where they all are 10 years on. I'm all in for it because as conclusive as it was, it's incredibly open-ended as well, because they abandon the children, they head to Moscow. You absolutely no idea of what's going to happen.
I'm count me in on that.
Good.
I would absolutely be in on that for sure. And you and I, our filmographies have one thing in common. It's acting with Frank Langella. Believe it or not, I was in a movie called Draft Day,
in which
he played the owner of a team and I was playing myself. I do my own accents.
Brilliant.
And thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I remember We were shooting it on the set of an NFL draft that I was hosting, and I had the scripts in front of me, and I was just doing my other job, and I didn't learn the lines at all. And Frank Langella came up in these glasses, introduced himself to me, and asked me if I wanted to read lines with him, and I was not prepared. And I literally had one of those, you know, I have your dream where you're back in college and yeah. you're going to fail the class because you're not studying.
Yeah.
I freaked out. I was not ready. I asked him for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
He gave me a couple minutes.
Good.
And I looked at the script and I put it out in front of me, and he knew it off the top of his head, and I was reading, and I thought to myself, he hates me. That's what I thought to myself.
How did it go?
It went well.
Good.
Yeah. The residual checks come in. They're like,
amazing.
They're $1.50 or
that's
whatever.
That's all you want?
That's it.
Is it on YouTube? Can we watch this?
It's called Draft Day. Yeah. Yeah. Kevin Costner's in it.
Oh, my goodness.
Me and my buddy Kevin. Yeah. We go way back.
Amazing. I'm gonna look this up.
You and I have heard something in common.
Yeah. I mean, no one has stories like Frank Langella. His showbiz stories. He writes books about them now.
Yes.
Unashamedly.
I bet so. Oh, and I forgot the other thing is I've thrown cocaine out of a plane.
Have you really?
No, I've
not. But you see, I wouldn't I'd have followed you on that one. I was like, there's nothing about you that would make me think that you hadn't.
I'm the most interesting man in the world.
Yes.
I wasn't expecting to see you kicking off Cocaine Bear.
I wasn't expecting to be in it when we went to Ireland to shoot. And I was looking at the script and I said to Kerry, I was like, who's playing that guy at the beginning in that opening scene? Because I don't know. I went, text Banksy, tell her I'll play it. Or text her, say, can I play it?
Yeah, Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, sorry, okay. Yes. Elizabeth was working with Kerry on another project and just said, look, I know we're doing this. I have this other movie that's greenlit in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to shoot Ireland as Tennessee.
Yes.
Over the summer. Do you want to do it? And, you know, it's called Cocaine Bear. And Kerry went, Cocaine Bear? Cocaine Bear? Yeah. No one can still quite get over the title. When I look back, that was what I enjoyed most. Was
yes.
When you broke that title to people, he's like, Kerry's doing a film called Cocaine Bear. And everyone goes, sorry, you broke up them. What did you say? You went, Cocaine Bear. Yes. Yeah. But the guy who threw the cocaine out of the plane,
yes.
Andrew Thornton III.
Yes.
I swear to you, deserves a movie about his life. He deserves the prequel.
What do you got?
I'm already pitching it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what's his story? Do you know?
I mean, long, varied, and very interesting. Ultimately, he was a DEA agent who kind of figured out that he could fly small planes of coke back into the U.S.,
okay.
into the Appalachians.
So he broke bad, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay.
He was a double agent for a long time.
Uh-huh.
You know, the rumor is, when they realized that there was an altercation on the plane, they also think he was having a fight with his karate instructor on the plane, killed his karate instructor, threw the cocaine out, jumped out, and then they don't even know how his parachute didn't open, because there was no malfunction with the parachute. It was a fully operational one. There was no marks on him, but he fell to his death.
Is that why you're doing karate kicks on the plane?
Yes. Yeah, he was studying karate at the time. He traveled everywhere with his karate instructor. I mean, come on. Andrew Thornton deserves this.
And so, this is great. So,
yeah.
So the movie could just be about his life, and then the last scene is what you just did.
Literally ramp up the last few seconds on, you just show that first scene of Cocaine Bear.
That's the last scene of the film.
Yes. Yeah.
And roll credits.
Right. Let's get this financed right now.
Go.
Right here. Yeah. Call in if you'd like to finance. Yeah. We'll call it Cocaine Hair.
Did you read lines with Kerry, like just shaking your head? Like, what the hell is this movie all about?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was like, I'm reading lines with you. First of all, I want to read this. So yeah, I would kind of run around the house going, and she was like, that's a Wookiee, you half-wit. And I was like, all right, I'm trying my best.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh. Perry Mason airs Mondays at 9 Eastern time on HBO. New episodes. Good luck. Season 2 premiered on this past Monday. Anything you want to come in and talk about, you are more than welcome to come back.
Oh, like, thank
I said,
you very much.
Big fan. And just say, if you want, just drop at the dinner. Kelly O'Coin's been here. I don't know if he's going to be part of the dinner. For the Americans.
Oh, I hope so.
I hope so, too. Okay, so let's just hope as well.
Yeah.
Just throw it in there.
Yeah.
Plus three, plus four.
Love it.
Let's do it.
Great.
Let's get it done.
Brilliant.
Very good. Matthew Reese is here on The Rich Eisen Show. Everyone, check out Perry Mason on HBO. We'll wrap up this show and let you know about our Friday show in a moment. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network with our Roku channel live stream, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. That was fun with Matthew Reese.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
Did he think really that I've thrown cocaine out of a plane? Did he think that for a split second? Was I that convincing?
He was willing to just roll with anything.
He really was great.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Delight. What a delight.
What a delight.
And then we got the two of you together. There's a whole bunch of photos you just took with him.
We were going for it.
Okay. Well, we'll post those. You do have the Matthew Reese look a little bit. You do.
Very good blue. I think it's the blue eyes.
Is that what it is?
I think.
Okay. Let's go to the phone lines. Brian in Brooklyn, New York, has been hanging on for a while. What's up, Brian?
How's it going, Rich?
How you doing, Brian? How you been?
I'm doing well. Love enjoying the New York weather.
Okay. That's good.
Yes. I just had a quick rebuttal to your Lamar Jackson take.
Go for
and
it.
Your worries.
Okay.
I just feel like you shouldn't worry. I feel like no one should worry. Lamar Jackson has proven himself. He's proven himself for how many years since he's been in the league? Before he's been in the league, he went to a Louisville team that wasn't top tier before he got there. He got there, put that team on the map. He got to the league, put the Ravens back on the map. He's put his team on his back numerous times. We've seen it on fourth downs. We've seen it on prime time. You see it on the play. If people say he couldn't win in the playoffs, he's shown he can. He couldn't throw his first year. Came back the next year, gotten better. He's always improved. He gets hurt the last two seasons. It's football. We know this. Yeah, you're asking for a lot of money, and yeah, that goes into consideration on getting your money. But the man has shown that he's worth the money. Why is it pulling nails and teeth, and why does this man have to go to you know what, stick to my guns mode? Can't he get, because I'm pretty sure, first of all, let's be clear. Deshaun didn't deserve that.
Correct.
He shouldn't have set the standard. Deshaun Watson shouldn't have been the one to set the standard.
That's correct.
I agree.
Okay.
But it's there now. We go off, like you. I've heard you say on numerous occasions, you are with the next man. The next man up gets the biggest contract.
But Kyler didn't do it. And Russell didn't do it.
We all know Kyler's problems, and we all know Russell Wilson's getting up there in age. Kyler has never put his team on his back. Yes, Kyler's a great player. We understand that. No disrespect to the young man. Mm-hmm. But he's never put his team on his back like Lamar Jackson has. He's never improved to the point that Lamar, like, the deficiencies of Lamar Jackson and the deficiencies of Kyler Murray, who has made a bigger jump since coming into the league?
Well, in terms of winning and going into the playoffs and winning, personal accolades, it's clearly Lamar Jackson. Look, the issue is that Lamar's, you know, let's also be clear here too. Lamar's situation is he's got a team that doesn't want to pay him like Deshaun Watson, doesn't want to be the team that makes Deshaun Watson's contract a precedence. They don't want to do that. Just because the Browns did it for Deshaun, for somebody that we can both agree shouldn't have been the flag planter for that, why would the Ravens do that even though they love Lamar? And could you allow that the last 2 years, despite how he has proven in the past the ability to put the team on his back, has given the team a little bit of pause whether he'll answer a bell when the chips are down? I mean, they played a playoff game without him. And why wasn't he there? You know what I mean? Like, there's something up that makes me wonder what's happening. And if I'm another team out there and under the current circumstances, I need to write a contract that the Ravens could match because I'm now talking with a new set of ears and eyes with Lamar than the one that he's been talking to over the last 2 years. I've broken through in a way that the Ravens haven't. So the Ravens are just going to come in, and my work is now for the Ravens, not for my team. So I don't even want to go down that road. That's what's going on. And also, when I'm used to calling an agent, I'm out talking to someone's mother. And I'm not saying this to denigrate. I'm also just pointing out how things are really unique in the same way that his talent is also unique and singular. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense. But what I would say to that is he's a unique player. Lamar Jackson is a unique player. He's shown that off the field.
Yes.
He's shown that on the field.
Yes.
Let's move accordingly. Okay, we're in the space where, okay, we know this guy, he doesn't have an agent. You're dealing with him personally. Let's be transparent. The things that you may want to filter out with an agent, you can't do now. Okay, so now let's work how we should with this guy. Let's talk as men. Let's talk as business partners, because that's what we are. I've shown you that I'm a great business partner. I've shown you that. Yes, I've been hurt. It's football. Now, if for a guy that played football in the past, if we're not making up, and this nobody's making money in high school. Well, it's different now.
But yes, sir.
When I was younger, we weren't making money in high school, right? So let's put the playoffs in the position of money. If I get hurt in halfway through the season, and we're not on the verge of getting into the playoffs, and it's a serious injury, my coach is going to say, Lamar's mother in this situation is going to say, you're not playing for anything right now. This can damage you long term. Let's think about college, right? Lamar Jackson, this can damage you for a long time. Let's think about your contract for future reference, for a future team,
yes,
or this same team. You don't want to hurt yourself more. Yes, we're in the playoffs. Yes, your team is in the playoffs, but at this point, this is a business. I have to think about my business.
I know.
I've shown the team that I'm for the team. When I'm comfortable in the middle of my contract, rookie contract, whatever, when I'm comfortable with the team comfortable with me, I've shown that I'm here for you.
Well, I appreciate now, Brian, I'm up against the end of the show. Don't hang up on him just yet. I want to say thank you for the back and forth. Call back anytime. By the way, I also miss talking to somebody with a New York accent as well. Thanks for the call, Brian. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you got it. That's Brian in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, this is going to – let's have the conversation again tomorrow, because nothing's going to get done until at least next week, and then we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it at length on tomorrow's program. I want to thank today's guests, Matthew Reese and Nolan Smith and Chris Mad Dog Russo and Tom Pelissero. Back to wrap up the show on the Roku channel in a moment.